part-time job as in the organic department as a laboratory assistant.
What courses were you taking when you first?
Well, they had the required courses. One of the things they had, of course, when you went to Illinois, to get in the graduate department, graduate school, you had to take departmental exams. You had to take an exam in analytical chemistry, one in, I think, physical chemistry. Was it in analytical chemistry? There was about four of them that I remember, and you had to take those departmental exams to start with to get into the graduate school, which I did. And of course, then there was a required. I'd had a course at Syracuse where we studied G. N. Lewis's. What's the name of it? Thermodynamics by Lewis and Randall.
Lewis and Randall, yes.
Well, I had to take that over again. Rodebush, who was a professor of physical chemistry there at Illinois, was a student of G.N. Lewis's. And that was a required course. And then Adams gave an advanced organic chemistry course. I was in a peculiar situation there. I had to take the course, but also I got the job of grading exam papers and figuring out, we used to give them, little problems to solve. In other words, a material does this and does that. This is some of the chemistry of it. What is it? And I used to make out those things for the people that were taking the course with me. See, now one of the things that used to, of course, they didn't mind barking at me or telling me I was wrong here and there. And once in a while, I made a mistake grading their paper, not about it. Then they'd go down to Adams and complain, and Adams would say, well, if that's the way Hyde marked it, that's the way it's going to be. He was that kind of a person that he didn't let you down no matter what. And actually, one of the people was Wendell Stanley. Mm-hmm. You probably, he's the one that got the Nobel Prize for crystalline tobacco mosaic virus. Well, his writing was so bad that sometimes I couldn't read it. And I would, you'd get a little irritated and you'd mark off or things like that. He was a pretty good student. Adams' writing wasn't anything to brag about. Lots of times he'd leave a list of things that he thought I should be looking at, or and I'd have to go down and get his secretary to read them.
When did you start your research with Adam?
Almost immediately. I guess this shows up somewhere here. I'm getting a little confused, I think. One of the first ones, he wanted me to make some mixed esters of phthalic acid. He wasn't amiss to looking at patent things and useful industrial things. So one of the first things, he wanted me to make a few mixed esters of phthalic acid, which I did. I think he I don't know whether he got a patent on them. I think there was a patent somewhere.
There were two early patents with
Adams. That might be one of them. Anyway, he wasn't amiss to looking at the useful side of things. And so then after that, I did try to make some derivatives of glucose, which wasn't very successful. Glucose, they're pretty subject to strong reagents, and I wanted to start with acetobromoglucose and make some derivatives, but it never got off the ground. And then I got the idea that here's do you remember the Kaufler formula for diphenyl derivatives? That they called it the sandwich.
Oh yes, yes.
Formula folded back that gave you a right and left, that gave optical activity. Well, along about this time, Bell and Kenyon in England came along with an optically active species. They couldn't be a sandwich formula. It disproved the Kaufler formula. And they were miserable things to synthesize. But they did show that restricted rotation was the basis. And I got to looking at that thing, and the miserable synthesis of those things were very difficult. And I got the idea that, well, you can get the interference with the same groups if you get the asymmetry by substituting further back. And that was part of my thesis, in other words.
Okay.
I don't know, I think I got the, I thought I had reprints.
I think I have that one.
Oh.
The one from Jack's, yes.
And then I didn't get one isolated, but Wendell Moyer, Dr. Moyer, who came after me, he took on that problem, and in a month's time he had one. He was used to this, if you take the bromo compounds and copper, and cuprous bromide, I think, and it's a way of tying the two phenyl groups together, and in less than 2 months, I think he had one out and resolved.
Mm.
And so Wendell Moyer was, I don't know whether he was involved in, no. But then there was another fellow working on ephedrine. Of course, one of Adam's interests at that time was natural products. In fact, one of the fellows that was working in the lab with me was Chalmugra oil. Was at the time one of the things in India that they used for,
leprosy, wasn't it?
What was it?
Leprosy,
yeah. And so Jim Arvin was the fellow who was working on this problem and trying to put different groupings on the end to compare with the behavior of this Chalmugra oil. And then there was a fellow, Browning was his name, that is on this list here, on this first one. Yeah, it's Hyde, Browning, and Adams. Synthetic analogs of ephedrine was another part of my thesis. Well, he was working on the problem already, but he wasn't moving very fast. And here he was trying to purify some materials by distillation, and they were not that stable. And all he had to do, well, what I did was make the hydrochloride and recrystallize it. And so
Adam suggested that you move on to that
Well, I've forgotten now just the details of it, whether you want me to help or... one of the things... you know, when things used to go bad, things went haywire in the afternoon, I'd go down to the gym and spend a couple hours down there trying everything. And one of the things I tried to do was to make a hexahydrobenzoyl chloride. I wanted to make the ketone of that and convert it into an ephedrine analog. And the way I tried to do it was take hexahydrobenzoyl chloride and react it with diazomethane to put a methyl group in place of the chlorine. And I built a fancy all-glass apparatus, and I'd carry out the reaction, and then I'd try to start distillation. I didn't realize that these diazo compounds are, you got to look out for them. But I'd get to a certain temperature, and the thing let go, and the top of the, I made all glass apparatus, the top of the glass and the thermometer hit the ceiling, and that hexahydrobenzoyl chloride is a nasty lacrimator. And I would go out and sit on the fence in the fresh air for a little while. And then I just tried the thing. I tried it twice. I was pretty determined. And when the temperature got to the same point, the way it went again. And really what I hadn't done was to completely decompose that diazo compound. It's an intermediate in that, or azo compound, whatever it was. But so I decided, well, I'll let that one go. But those were the two things that were part of my doctor's thesis. And
what kind of a person was Adams to work for?
Oh, wonderful. He had also this Aletha Davies, forgotten now what she was working on. You can believe this, at this time in 1928 when we graduated, these were the four of us that got doctor's degrees in organic. There was myself, and Jim Arvin, Aletha Davies, and Paul Salzberg. Paul Salzberg was one of Marvel's students. He's the one that, he retired here about 5 or 10 years ago. He was director of research at DuPont. But those were the four of us, and you can imagine, what, I don't know how many that graduate now, but this diphenyl thing was the first of this whole series. Before he got through, I think there was something like over 200 papers in that area, graduate student theses that in that area, all kinds of pretty fancy molecules that where you got restricted rotation and this developed optical activity. So that was part of my thesis.
You mentioned earlier that you had some interaction with both Marvel and Carruthers.
Oh, yes, yes. Well, I had Professor Carruthers as in this organic qualitative analysis course. He was a good teacher, of course, if you could stay awake. I mean, but he was there isn't any question about his being a great scientist. And those people, Marvel and Carruthers and Jack Johnson, they'd always be together talking chemistry. And lots of times they'd go across, it was against the law to smoke on campus.
And, really?
And they would go over to Farwell's restaurant across the road and sit down and have a cigarette or something and talk chemistry, of course. That was almost a daily routine. But they were all nice people. And Adams was that sort of a person. I remember one time Aletha Davies, she came from around where Where's the Reader's Digest is located in...
Pleasantville, New York.
That's right near there, yeah. And she was selling subscriptions. And one day she was trying hard to sell me a subscription. Well, I didn't have the money to... And Adams happened to walk in. And he heard some of the conversation. He said, I'll tell you, I'll take a dollar bill out of my pocket, and you guess whether the last digit is odd or even. And if you lose, you buy me a subscription. And if I lose, I'll buy you a subscription. Well, I guessed right. He bought me my first subscription to Reader's Digest. But he was that kind of a person, very personable. And of course, he was very knowledgeable, too. And he just was a good teacher. And he was another one of these top teachers you get in the classroom with him. And he immediately got you interested in what he was talking about. And Marvel was all... I don't think I ever had a course from Professor Marvel, but he was such a nice person. Anything he could help you with, he was there to do it. And I remember my last year, he came in one day, it was towards the end of the term, and he said, did you send in an application for a scholarship? And I said, no, I'm satisfied with what I'm doing, I like it. And he says, here's a form, you better send it in. You might as well. The next morning he came around and said, well, you have a scholarship for your last year. So I had to skip a little bit this last year, I'll tell you. I've forgotten just what it amounted to, but of course you got your tuition and fees along with this. And it gave me a chance to put full time on my thesis work. So that was a very nice thing. But I, as a boy, I had saved up about $120 peddling papers way back, and I used that up. And I wound up graduating without owing anybody anything. So, well, you can see I had some pretty good breaks.
Yes.
I was lucky, if you want to put it that way. So that was...
Did Adams give you freedom and to do to work in the lab? Did he come in every day and see you?
Oh yeah, he'd stop by almost every day and say what's new. And if you didn't want to, if you had something you wanted to say to him, he'd stop and come in and talk with you. If you didn't, he'd just keep on going. He didn't. There was no pressure or anything like that.
Mm-hmm.
He was a research man himself all the way through.
Did the Adams and Marvel group work close to each other?
They each had their own... I don't know whether when they got together what affairs that they might have... whether they gave... compared notes or whatnot. I think the projects were pretty much their own projects. I don't think there was any mixing of the types of project that he had. One of the students at that time was one of Adams' students was Bill Lycan. You may have run into him somewhere along the line. I remember Adams, they had a faculty meeting or something, and they invited all of us there. And Lycan was there. I guess I was talking to him, and Professor Adams come up and said, where's that still bean you were making for me? Apparently Lycan was supposed to have been making some. And right out of the office, he says, well, it's still being prepared. This was typical of Lycan. He was quite a nice fellow. I knew him quite well. He lives up here in Naples.
Oh.
When he retired, I think he was director of research for Johnson & Johnson. I think he first went to DuPont, and then he left DuPont and went to Johnson & Johnson. I've forgotten. I don't know what his thesis was, but I think he did go to, you know, back in those days, almost every PhD that came out of Illinois, he wound up in Wilmington, Delaware. A lot of them did, for sure.
What were you thinking about as you were completing your PhD work about career plans?
Well, I really hadn't given it much thought. I guess I just took it for granted I'd probably go to work for DuPont. But along about time to graduate, Professor Adams came in and he said one day, and he said, I've just learned from Professor Conant that he's gotten some funds for postdoctoral work. And if you would be interested, you should write to him. So I thought, well, gee, that sounds good. So I sat down and wrote to him, and he offered me a postdoctoral scholarship, or whatever you want to call it. And so I finished a course in June, and I'd known this aside since 23, actually. A friend of mine had gone, Bethlehem Steel Company had what they call a loopers course, young new engineers. This fellow was a chem engineer, a friend of mine, named Bill. It'll come to me maybe after a while, but he went down there. He went to work for Bethlehem Steel Company, and when I'd finished in June, he invited me to come down, pay him a visit. And so I went down to Bethlehem. That was long, that was in the fall of 1923. And so that's where I met Mrs. Hyde. And when I met her, she didn't know much English. But then later in 28, after I graduated, I decided, well, we're going to get married. I didn't have a cent left, but she had about $75 saved up, I guess, to buy a ring. And so I went down to Bethlehem, and we got married in some minister's backyard down there. But when I went to Bethlehem that summer, I really worked. My father leased a sand bed from some people by the name of Westfall. They had about a 200-acre farm there. I'd never lived on a farm or knew, but he was one of these gentleman farmers that spent his summers up at Thousand Islands. And he had people working for him, and they quit on him this summer. And they wanted my father to take the farm business over on shares. And I got the job. So I cut 150 acres of alfalfa three times. I cut 10 acres of barley and 15 acres of wheat. And I had one person to help me get it in the barn. And I started June 10th, and I finished about September 3rd. And I figured, well, I've earned a vacation. This fellow invited me down there, so that's why that's where I first met Mrs. Hyde.
Then you went You were married after you finished at Illinois.
Yeah.
And we moved
right away to Cambridge.
Mm-hmm. Do you remember how much Conant was paying you when you got there?
Yes. This is a hearsay story, so I couldn't verify it, but Mallinckrodt had just finished building a fancy new chemistry building, and Converse Hall was the big organic laboratory part, and Conant had been on sabbatical leave at the University of California. This is a story that I heard, see. I don't know that it's true. But they had offered him a pretty good salary out at Berkeley, I guess. And here was Mallinckrodt didn't like the idea. And so up to get Conant back, I understand that they gave him a grant of $25,000 or something like that to hire postdoctoral people.
Mm.
This is the story I heard. Anyways, I got it. And I think it was for $2,500, I think.
How did that compare with what you were getting at Illinois?
Pardon?
What were they paying you at Illinois before?
Oh, let's see. I think that was about a. Was it a? It was around $30 a month or something like that. It paid your room and board just about. As I say, I used up that little bit of money that I had saved at an earlier time. But that was good for me. I mean, it really helped me a lot. At this time, Professor Conant was interested in blood pigments and chlorophyll, and the first thing he wanted me to do was work with chlorophyll. And I didn't know beans about chlorophyll at the time. But
did you meet with him shortly, as soon as you got to Harvard?
Oh yes, he was there. And in fact, they had. Are you acquainted with things down at Cambridge? The old Boylston Hall.
Yes.
Boylston Hall was starting to fall apart, really, and that's where I started working. And actually, Conant and many of the people had already gathered or had piled it together. They were getting organized and ready to move into Converse. So that's where I started work in Boylston Hall, of all places, where you weren't sure that the ceiling wasn't going to fall down in your product. So I started working on chlorophyll at that time, and I learned pretty rapidly a lot of the details of chlorine E. Phytochlorine E was one of the products that we finally isolated. We started with isolation of some of the products. Of course, this was at Hans Fischer. Hans Fischer in Germany was one of the big porphyrin. He got the Nobel Prize, I think, for his synthesis of porphyrins later on. I don't know just when that was. And so Willstetter and Stahl had done quite a bit of work to isolate chlorophyll and chlorophyll compounds, if I remember right. And so there was a background of work to start on, but when I started to isolate some of the compounds to work with, a lot of them are so insoluble. I can remember using 5 gallons of ether to extract a fraction of a gram of material. It, with some of the things were that low solubility. But I learned pretty rapidly what chlorophyll was all about.